We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And just to conclude that thought, there's also 1 in 5 New Orleans households don't have access to a motor vehicle. So there's a large percentage of our population that is using other forms of transportation besides personal automobiles. So by providing additional transportation options like high-quality bike facilities, those residents have new and affordable options to get around the city for whatever their transportation needs are, you know, going to the market, going to their job, getting their kids to school.
Or riding for fitness.
Yeah, well, there's always that, huh? You know, as we talked about the weight loss drug in the news before. I do know this, looking at the map, and you can find New Orleans Bikeway Blueprint map. It'd be easier just to Google that. It's nolagis.maps.arcgis.com. So, I would just Google New Orleans Bikeway Blueprint map, and you can see it. But having grown up in Algiers, as you both know, I did, I can look at the streets where the bike lanes are, and I do know that especially when it comes to shared lanes, those would be the roadways that, as I remember, would be the ones that were particularly prone to speeding. And I guess at some point there was some kind of study done or some kind of information gathered to determine it?
Yeah. So in the planning for this round of projects that's underway, the city collected traffic counts and speed counts along the corridors to help inform the decision making of what was the best way to balance our safety goals with the needs of people that are using the roadway now and the latent demand of other users that may use the roadway. We talked a lot about MacArthur Boulevard when we spoke last week. So in MacArthur in particular, the data that we collected was showing that, you know, upwards of 70% of motor vehicles on that roadway were exceeding the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit, which, for anyone familiar with MacArthur, you know, it's a residential roadway for the majority of its length. So that kind of speed moving through a neighborhood where there's, you know, right in people's front yards, where their kids might be playing, it just really isn't compatible and presents a really obvious safety concern that we felt we could address with this project by changing the roadway configuration to reduce that speeding traffic while still being able to provide the throughput that the current traffic levels for motor vehicles warrants.
Tommy, when we first started building bike facilities in the city of New Orleans back in 2004 or so, we started with about 5 miles of designated bikeways. But back then, the state of the technology, the science of bike infrastructure was a lot different from what we see now. So we started with things called shared lane markings, which is the bicycle symbol with the two chevron markings on top that you see on parts of MacArthur and some other major streets, and also conventional bike lanes, which is simply a bike symbol with an arrow with a thermoplastic marking between the moving traffic and the bike lane. What has evolved in those last 15 years nationally, internationally, is a migration and evolution of those facilities toward more separation, more horizontal and vertical separation between the bicycle traffic and the automobile traffic. And oftentimes this will place a bicyclist behind a parked car or that sort of thing, you know, in the roadway for that level of protection. So the what people don't maybe see is that they may see a shared lane marking on a major street. That is technology that was being used, you know, 15, 20 years ago. We've now modernized and improved the level of care that we give to that mode of traffic and to other modes of traffic by separating the modes of traffic. This gives the bicyclist more comfort on the roadway, and it also gives the driver more control, knowing that the bicyclist will be, you know, in that facility. So I guess that what people are saying is sometimes they'll see these shared lane markings on a major street. We no longer design bikeways that way in the city of New Orleans. We go for added protection, added levels of comfort for the bike lane. So that's why you see more what is called protected bike lanes. So just something to clarify for your audience.
Sure. Are there plans to convert the shared paths to protected lanes?
Yeah, so I would
maybe
say
I'm conflating
that
terms. Let's pick it up when we come back. Let's do that. I think it'd be the best thing, Jennifer, because I might be looking at the legend here and not understanding between the difference between shared and protected. And we'll talk about the difference between that as well as answer some questions. If you all have any questions or comments about the city's bike lanes, text them in to 504-260-1870. One of them pops up here. Why is St. Charles Avenue different from MacArthur? Well, we'll find out when we come back here on WWL. 926, we're talking about the bike lanes in the city of New Orleans, which are somewhat controversial, but not everybody feels that way. We're talking to Jennifer Rooley, Mobility and Safety Program Lead in the Department of Public Works, and Dan Jatris, Policy and Program Manager for the Mayor's Office of Transportation, about how they came about and where they are and what happens from here. I believe we're going to go to the phone lines real quick here because Jody is on and is happy about the bike lanes. Good morning, Jody. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to share a personal anecdote about the bike lanes. I live in Algiers, and I have a daughter who's disabled. She's 21, and she's unable to drive, and quite honestly, she cannot manage a two-wheel bike very well either. But this year for Christmas, we had gotten her a three-wheeler, and we're so excited about it. It was going to allow her the freedom to get up to the shop on the plaza there off of MacArthur. And so the day after Christmas, we took it out. I knew the bike lanes were going to be in, and we were going to have this opportunity. And to be perfectly honest, she wasn't very successful with it because there were many cars that were parked in the bike lanes there. And maneuvering the large bike was just a little too much for him. So I can't speak to the aesthetics. I'm certainly not a traffic designer, but it was something that I was really looking forward to, and I hope that it continues to be an option for her. It's just one story and one person, but a person who's very, very important to me.
Jody, I'm glad you called because that's what we're all about, are people and stories, and I'm glad for your input. And you all, the phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. If you have any questions or comments about the bike lanes. Before we went to the break, Jennifer Rooley and Dan Jatris, I was looking at the map, and maybe I confused the legends about protected, shared. Can you kind of take us through verbally what the differences are, starting with a protected bike lane, and then work us through the different types?
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that, Tommy. It's a great question. As sometimes the terminology can be a little bit confusing. So where we talk about protected bike lanes, sometimes the people call this separated bike lanes. And generally those involve some level of horizontal and vertical separation from the roadway. So typically that will involve some striping as well as in many cases it's flex posts, sometimes it's curbing, sometimes it may be planters or that other kind of vertical element. But it provides some protection for the bike lane from the moving vehicles, parked vehicles, et cetera. And so this is sort of the premium type of infrastructure for retrofits of existing streets that many cities are going toward in the United States. the other type of bike lane that you'll see is called just a bike lane. Sometimes it's called a conventional bike lane. And as I mentioned before, it involves only a stripe on the ground. And then the bike lane is right there next to moving vehicles. Sometimes this can be integrated with a horizontal buffer, but seldom does it ever involve vertical elements, which adds that layer of protection. So there are a lot of those around town, including prior to the changes we made on MacArthur, there were some bike lanes there. There were also what is called shared lanes. Shared lanes are where the bicyclist shares the lane with moving vehicles. Drivers are required to provide 3-foot passing clearance, at least 3 feet, when passing bicyclists. But otherwise, the bicyclist can use that outside travel lane, and the markings generally show to expect bicyclists there. And it also helps to keep bicyclists out of the door zone, if there are parked vehicles, that sort of thing. So there are some different things that shared lane markings do. But like I mentioned, they're not appropriate for all streets. They're appropriate for lower volume streets, lower speed streets. And then that brings us to another classification, which is bike boulevard. And a bike boulevard is sometimes called a neighborhood greenway in other cities, but it is a local street, which is like a neighborhood street, very low traffic volume, low traffic speeds, and it helps people to get where they need to without having to go to that larger street. And so the idea is that you would have a combination of these facilities in a neighborhood so that you can get wherever you need to without having to encounter, no facility at all. And then there's something called a shared use path, also known as an off-road trail. These are paved paths, similar to what you see on the levee. This is something that Lissy Greenway is one of these. And so these are about 10 to 12 feet wide and allow for both bicycle traffic and walking. So the terminology can be a little confusing. It's called shared use path because bicyclists are sharing with pedestrians. So that pretty much covers the gamut. And the idea is that every neighborhood has different types of needs. And so you match the needs based on the types of roadways that you have, and then you retrofit with these kind of facilities. And so as Jody was describing, using a protected bike lane when you have like a three-wheel bike, and you may have a rider who's not as confident as, say, the guys that get out on the lakefront every weekend, the protected bike lane provides that level of connectivity, accommodation, and comfort to users who are not the fast and fearless. So we find that this type of facility is suitable for a lot of our, major roadways around the city, but it requires retrofitting and rearranging some things.
So people can envision it when we're talking about protected bike lane, that would be MacArthur and Algiers, where the right lane is for parking and then the bike lane is between that and the curb, that would be a protected bike lane?
Yes, sir. There are some other examples. Our earliest example was at the foot of the Lafitte Greenway on Basin Street in 2015 when we built that connection. And so basically we carved out a two-way protected bike lane to connect to St. Louis Street. But the types of facility you're talking about is a parking protected bike lane where parking, on-street parking, is a layer of the buffer between the moving vehicles and the bike lane. And this is consistent with the types of approaches that many European cities have taken for decades. And they may look different in those cities, but it's the same kind of approach of placing the bicyclist behind parked cars or on the sidewalk side of the street, and then creating those sort of the daylighting of the intersection so that people can actually see bicyclists and bicyclists and see approaching vehicles as they approach those intersections.
This text pops up, and I think it's a kind of interesting question. Why do the bike proponents focus on higher speed congested throughways, why not shift the bikes to less trafficked nearby highways? Either one of you?
Yeah, that's a question that comes up, there's a combination of answers. Major streets throughout the city are where destinations are, where the stores that people are trying to shop at, schools that people are trying to get to. So the jobs that people are trying to work at. So the destination that someone's trying to reach is the same no matter what mode of transportation they're using to get there. And in some cases, Jennifer mentioned the bicycle boulevards. In some areas of the city, there are good alternative parallel routes that people can use if they're not comfortable on a higher speed, higher volume street. But not every neighborhood has those alternative routes. And in some cases, neighborhood streets will run into interruptions, a canal, a railroad track. So in terms of completing the network, we have the blueprint citywide, and it combines, those different facility types on a combination of the higher speed, higher volume roads and the lower speed, lower volume roads to have that citywide network. But going back to the original conversation about safety, we still want to improve safety on these roadways. So we don't want to just turn a complete blind eye to major roads, and only because our focus is on safety for everyone, not just creating a bikeway network. Like Jennifer said, we've got these multiple goals that we layer over each other to then determine and develop what is a design that is going to meet all of those holistic goals that the city has to improve safety, public health, quality of life, et cetera.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, pick it up when we come back. A text pops up about how is all of this being paid for, which in the city strapped for cash, I think is a valid question. 9:36, 24 before 10. Our conversation about bike lanes in New Orleans continues momentarily. Right now, let's take a look at traffic on WWL. 9:43 now, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jennifer Ruley, Mobility and Safety Program Lead in the Department of Public Works for the city, Jan Jatras, Policy Program Manager for the Mayor's Office of Transportation, about the bike lanes in the city that have become somewhat controversial when it comes to financing these things. Where's that money coming from, either Jennifer or Dan?
Yeah, sure. So these recent projects are being funded as part of the city's bond program. The voters approved bond funding to invest in infrastructure. Infrastructure is a top priority for our residents, and it's a top priority for the Cantrell administration to invest in and improve. And the infrastructure, whether it's advancing safety, whether it's providing a bikeway network, whether it's addressing transportation equity issues in the community, infrastructure is infrastructure, and that's what we're investing in. And these projects are including road repairs, they're including the new bikeways, they're including upgrades to pedestrian infrastructure, so that we can provide a transportation network that gives our residents options, like Jody and her daughter, or seniors that want to be able to age in place in the community that they've lived in for years. We want to make sure that our transportation network provides those options for people, because transportation is often the second highest household expense. So we want people to have affordable options to be able to get around the city safely.
So, Tommy, this is also about producing multiple benefits from our roadways. When we first started the planning process around the blueprint, we asked people, having decent streets is important to anyone in the city. Everyone wants decent streets. They want good paving. They don't want to hit a pothole, that sort of thing. But what else can our roadways deliver to us? And so as Dan mentioned, there's a lot of transportation functions that they have to deliver. But there's also just getting around in your neighborhood, whether I want to walk across the street or walk my kids to school or maybe take a little fitness jog or bike ride, and I shouldn't have to pay membership at a gym in order to have that ability to exercise, or to I shouldn't have to get in a car in order to go to that shop that's two blocks away from me. I should be able to get there safely without having to resort to elaborate ways of getting around. And so what we realize is that there's a lot of health benefits and just quality of life benefits that we can layer into the roadways to ensure that people, you know, can live in their neighborhoods and feel like they can't, that they're not trapped, that they don't, you know, I can't cross that roadway because it's a highway. I can't walk my kids to school because there are too many problem intersections and drivers are crazy. You know, you always hear, we hear that a lot. And so what we... Yeah, go ahead.
Just a couple of questions, if I may, before we run out of time. Somebody's texted me about 1,000 times here about the difference between St. Charles Avenue and MacArthur Boulevard. I've not been down St. Charles lately. In terms of bike paths, what is the difference between MacArthur and St. Charles, and why is there a difference?
So that goes back to Jennifer's conversation from the last segment, talking about how design has evolved over the years. There is a conventional bike lane on a large portion of St. Charles that's been there for the better part of a decade at this point. But if you look to the citywide bikeway blueprint, you'll see that plan calls for there being a protected bike lane on St. Charles Avenue. As with many of our higher speed, higher volume streets, that is the standard of facility that the blueprint is aiming for. So future projects will continue this path that we're following of providing new bikeway infrastructure where it hasn't existed at all, as well as upgrading older bike infrastructure to the facility types that came out of that planning process and that meet the standard and best practices that we're seeing around the country.
I would also
so not
add
yet
that
would be the answer, right?
The answer is not yet, and also it's a very long corridor, and so we have to look at how we can implement in a way that is logical and rational because of it's going through many different neighborhoods, and it's a very long segment. So those are always trickier. However, I would say that there are differences also in the fundamental design of the roadways from St. Charles to MacArthur, for example. And that is the width of the roadway. You have different times during which these roadways were built. And so some of the older neighborhoods, you'll have, you know, narrower streets and tighter intersections, so more density. And then some of the newer suburbs, like Portage of Algiers and other parts of the city, you'll have wider streets and then less density. And so these are all complications that we have to take into account as we develop the retrofits for these types of roadways.
And very quickly, before we let you go, do you have an amount on how much has been spent so far on bike lanes, or how much is budgeted, or how much will be spent?
So, you know, since we've been putting bike lanes in from 2004, you know, the numbers over the years, I don't know if I can give you a number like for that entire time. However, in terms of the amount of bond funding that has been allocated, I would say about 14 million have been allocated through various bond issues. And what we've been able to do is fully leverage federal grants and other federal funding to match those dollars. And so we get more bang for the buck. That means repairing roadways and doing all the things we need to do when we're there. So it's you know, there is a dedication of some local resources, but there's also heavy leveraging of federal resources as well for those investments.
Thank you. I appreciate both of your time, both of you giving us the time. Jennifer Rulli, Dan Jatras, talking about bike lanes, taking a break. Coming back, finding out what Newell Norman has planned for us today here on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.